You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Hey, Phil.
Manny, bon dia.
How's it going, man?
It's
always good to see you.
Another episode of Safety Corner.
Because I'm always wondering, who are we going to upset?
I don't want to upset anybody.
No, it's not upset. Who are we going to educate?
Educate is a better word.
Yes.
Right? And today we got a special guest.
Very special guest.
Someone that is a health and safety professional. Someone that has mentored me along my career. Someone that always picks up the phone whenever I have a question. And someone that's been around the block in construction, in health and safety, and whose opinion I value a lot. So today's guest is Mr. Frank Tancredi. Frank, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Frank. Good morning. Thanks, Manny.
Great to meet you. Thank you so much for the goodies that you brought in.
Thank you.
Brought some donuts today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He brought some really nice donuts, man.
And I just want to point out, Frank looks very sharp today as usual.
Yeah.
Frank has always been known to be the sharp-dressed out of us bunch, you know, even on job sites.
I had a good teacher. My dad was a master tailor. So, yeah. So
in nine, is he still doing it?
He's passed, Manny. At 9 years old, I was wearing double-breasted suits made by
him.
I was wearing bespoke at nine.
I think every nine-year-old should be doing that.
Lovely. Hey, manners and etiquette go a long way.
So welcome, Frank. Really appreciate that he brought you in. We're going to have a very good talk. Obviously, it's all around safety. That's what this show is all about. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty of what's going on and what's not going on and what should be going on, all that stuff.
Awesome.
You want to tell the listeners and the viewers a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Manny, for having me on the show, and Philip for that introduction. I'm buying lunch at some point in my life. Yeah, so... almost 40 years coming up to in the industry,
mostly safety.
You're right. I'm 60. I'm 16, but reverse the numbers. I'll leave it to everyone. Started in heavy demolition in Toronto in the days of Greenspoon Demolition, Tepperman. Some of the old timers might remember those names. Dulsan, everything from petrochemical refinery demolitions to downtown buildings, some controlled demolitions, a few explosive demolitions using explosions or explosives. That was 11 years of my life. I started in safety with that company. I was happy to mentor a few while I was there. One of them was a former guest, Vince Iacolino. After those 11 years, 21 years with the Ministry of Labor as an inspector. So all
21 years in that block was like you left 5 years ago?
Yeah, 5 years ago.
Okay.
As an inspector and officer, mostly in the construction industry. Some industrial, but very little of that. And all that entails, the thousands inspections and the critical injuries, investigations, a few fatalities, unfortunately. And the last 5 years, I've been in infrastructure with two different companies, and now on a hiatus, taking a break, and waiting to get to my next project.
You going to get back into it?
There's something's lined up. Can't talk to it right now, but mostly transit infrastructure. Yeah.
What was the call in when you got into the safety, leaving the construction side of things? Like, what was it? Something was proposed to you and you thought, let me give this a try?
Great question. And I'll tell you why. At that time, which was the late 80s, early 90s, safety was newer at the corporate level, just in terms of, hey, listen, some of them were on board. A lot of the pressures was not only our regulation, which we were always trained that was the a minimum standard. And anytime we were pressed as a contractor, a demolition contractor, to, you know, be better give documents, was usually from either insurance-based, and specifically the petrochemical refinery. Let's say Esso. I remember doing 24 pages of a pre-work analysis, say, you know, health and safety analysis, 27 pages with drawings. How are you going to take down this huge holding tank? You know, that's empty now, but how are you going to demolish this? What's the procedure? And between them and the old Ontario Hydro, a lot of the pressures at that time, a lot of the good stuff was coming from our clients, okay, before even the regulatory push later on.
Was it money?
I don't know. It was just that it wasn't organized, I'd say. Okay. And slowly as the fines and some of the court cases started coming through for workplace injuries and got more media, let's say, the company I was involved in at the time actually had a problem unrelated, but related to the Ministry of the Environment, let's say.
Okay.
And I think at that time it was legal counsel, our own legal counsel advice to say, you know what? I think it's a good idea if you guys have a health and safety coordinator at your company. And this was the early 90s. And that's how I got into it. They looked at me and says, well, Frank, you know, we want you to head this up. By the time I left 5 years later, I left two of the coordinators, managers in charge there. One of them was Vince Iacolino. Great job, Vince.
This is getting a lot of shout outs.
Yes. So that's what happened. And that helped me jump onto or get accepted at the Ministry of Labor.
So you're part of the writing of the new standards in construction, so to speak. You were contributing.
Yeah, well, I guess I was contributing. There was a close relationship with the IHSA, you know, John Samet, if I can, he's retired now, and some of the people there, right? So
it wasn't called the IHSA back then.
No, it wasn't. It was the CSAO. Now I'm giving away my real age.
Yeah. 17.
I took some courses at the CSAO. I think some of the best construction safety courses I've taken were there.
Yeah. So that's basically it.
Yeah. So there's a healthy CV here to talk about what's going on today.
Yeah.
What is going on today?
Great question. I think some of the frustrations we were talking about earlier is we do hit, let's say, a plateau. We have lessened some injuries. Fatalities seem to be staying at the 20 mark, some years a few less, some years a bit more. But
is that ever questioned that it doesn't?
It
draw?
Is. It is. But I like to contribute to this. I said, listen, the workforce coming in are either newer workers. And remember, I'm going to use young workers, but the newer workers can be any age.
Yep.
They're just new
career
to
changers.
Construction.
Yep.
Hey, listen, I have a cousin who's in the dry cleaning business, and I went to go visit him. He says, Frank, I lost two of my workers in the dry cleaning business to you guys. I go, me? What do you mean, us guys? To construction. And this happened in the last 4 or 5 years after COVID.
Hmm.
So I said, oh, interesting. Sure, they look at construction. They're looking at the pay rate, the hourly rate. And so what's happened is, let's just say that those newer workers or young workers after school are coming to the industry and they're usually untrained if they end up with an organization that doesn't have a health and safety management system.
So where do they begin?
That's a great question.
I mean, you can't go online.
No.
Nobody's searching this stuff online.
I know. And that seemed to be a solution for a bit. Hey, all these gateways and websites, and does anyone take the time? Maybe they do. However, you know what happens. You're called to the job at Monday morning, 6 a.m., 5:30, and get to work, grab that stuff, get up on the roof, and make sure you get this done.
You know, in all fairness, all the videos that you guys have probably seen thousands more than I have.
Yeah.
You always seen those classic OSHA videos where, you know, hey, OSHA, Oregon, OSHA, whatever state or whatever it is. They never really discuss, we see what's clearly wrong, but they never really discuss why it got to this point, like the preceding time before this.
Yeah, and there's great organizations out there. Philip are helping them. He's helped them, you know, bring it up to a certain level. And I'm talking about everything from on a certain morning, you're going to have the company orientation.
Yeah.
They're going to go through, make sure that they have all their health and safety certification in place. Okay. So there's a vetting process. at least there's great, you know, a lot of the constructors in some jurisdictions called the primary contractor, especially in BC. I think today, to your question, I think some of the problems may be bringing into the fold the subcontractors.
Sure.
So subcontractor management seems to be a big focus from some of the bigger players.
Yeah.
They understood that. And I think the old bias or prejudice might have been, hey, that's your expertise. Let's use where I came from, demolition. They're the experts. Go do your job, right? Mm-hmm. Now they're asking for procedures, task analyses. At the minimum, Manny, a daily pre-work shift filled out form of how to prevent. I mean, three basic columns. The task, the hazard to the task, and then the controls.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's fair to point out too, Frank, the projects you work on, the clients that you have, would you say they're in the top 25% of the employers in this province? Type of projects you work on, infrastructure, et cetera, or do you think they're in the bottom 75%?
Yeah.
You know, is this right. Infill housing that's, that we're talking about, yeah. Low-rise residential, or are we talking about the level of safety on some of these infrastructure projects?
Yeah, that's a great point of view to give our listeners some background. Yes, I'd say to the top 25%.
Right.
And just as a lead-in, Phil, you're right, we worked on the underground economy. You know, what is that, right? I was explaining to Manny, us here in the room, we could start a roofing company today.
$250.
We could start today. That's right. Get it registered, the name, even if we want that. Register the name. We'll wait for later to register the corporation.
Sure.
And we have our first job. Our neighbor wants the roof done, and we're in business. We just grab a... You know, if we're doing the right thing, then listen, there's never a problem when all the right things are being done.
No.
Go ahead, Manny. Go.
There never really is. But then we see a lot of the stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
But it's always driven by money. Like the money is the root of all evil when it comes to that. It's just like you don't have a safety conversation until it affects the money. The moment it affects the money, then you have a safety conversation, which you should always have. Yeah. That conversation way before that.
How about you, Frank, at the Ministry of Labor? What is one of the most, I say, challenging or maybe heartbreaking things you've had to investigate or deal with?
Oh, yeah, there's a few there. But before I go there, Phil, to Manny's point, yeah, you know what? I have to say that when I saw safety work at the beginning of my career, it was my old boss. Great Italian guy. He's in his 90s now. Always had money, never complained about money because he was a smart guy. Mm-hmm. And when I went up to him, here's true leadership. Not now, I know, I understand. They have their mission statement. I'd go up to him and say, his name was Frank. Hey, Frank, I need this before we do that job. The workers need this. Then, okay, what are you looking at me for? Get it. I was impressed.
That's the
from
response.
Day one.
Yeah.
Get what you need. Get what we need. Right? To Phil, yeah, I mean, Phil, where do we start?
Give us a PG one. Don't give us an R-rated R one. We know the R-rated ones.
There's everything. Even the ones who survive, break my heart. There's a young worker who fell 47 feet from the top of a roof conversion, a church converted to a condo, and he survives. But you can tell he's going to have problems. His brain, bounced around in his head. And
what was he landed on? Like, was it?
Luckily, I think he landed on the overhead protection on the street, Manny, and he went through that. That helped to break his fall.
That's a sheet of ply, isn't
it? It is a sheet of ply, and interesting enough, some of them have those aluma scaffolds.
The beams,
but between the two beams was a sheet of plywood. He didn't hit his head on anything sticking up. He didn't hit his head on the stronger pieces of, a piece of steel or aluminum. He goes directly between. He doesn't land between the frames. It breaks his back. He lands perfectly in between, like through the ply, and survives. And you can tell he's walking askew. You know, it's his sense of hearing, right? His balance is gone. So that's tough.
He landed on his side? On his front or back?
We don't know.
Okay.
We don't know.
And obviously, he wouldn't have had a lid on because if he would have been falling 47 feet.
He did have the lid because we found it on the ground.
So on point of impact, he actually had the lid?
He did.
Wow. Sounds like what he didn't have was a harness.
No, they removed the harness from him. They cut, emergency services cut the harness from him. What he wasn't, Phil, as you know, is he wasn't tied off.
There we go.
Now, when I went upstairs, all the tie-off ropes were in place. I think the issue in that case was basically they gave me a nice spreadsheet of all the workers. At that time, it was before working at Heights. But remember, and I want to point out to the listeners, that since 2000, there was training required by the employer of workers in fall arrest.
Since 2000?
Since 2000. It's in there.
Almost 25 years.
Yeah. So what kills me is after a lot happened after Phil's investigation there of the four workers who fell from the suspended scaffold, a lot of the new working at Heights came into place. They never got rid of the other one. And some of the strongest reactions, Manny, from employers was, Frank, why'd you stop my job? The guys have working at Heights, training. I go, I know, but there's a little section there. They're like twins that never went away, which is the employer still must ensure that the worker use fall protection system is adequately trained in its use and given adequate oral and written instructions, which is not the working at Heights. Everyone gets it confused. Why? At working at Heights, if I go to Phil, he really, no provider of working at Heights training has the time during that day to go every single, listen, we go to Granger, there's 30, 40 pages of products there.
Yeah.
And each one has a different discipline. There's the steel worker, there's a roofer, there's, I know. So what systems are good for me? I always tell the employer, do your research prior to. Of course the ministry comes, you're gonna get upset. Why did you stop my job? Because you haven't done your due diligence. You have not researched your own activity, the hazards related to your own tasks, right? And some of the good reactions I've got, even though was anger at themselves, some of the good executives, managers, and superintendents were said, oh, Frank, where can I get educated about this? I'm so angry, I'm not prepared, right?
And those are the good, like those are good guys, the far and few,
right? Those
are
the good guys. Those are the good guys.
The white caps.
Yeah. So going back to our worker, yeah, I suspect, he had balance issues all his life. The other one really was...
How old was he?
He was young, early 20s.
Oh, wow.
The other one was a heartbreaking double fatality at a steam facility. Father and son were inside a tank and got steamed to death. The father came out to get help for his son. We're talking about 200 degrees Fahrenheit or 400 degrees Fahrenheit, 200 PSI.
Do you pass out at that point or like how
your body goes suffering. Into shock for sure.
Yeah.
Just thinking that the father got out to look for help for his son, but it's the father who passed first that evening and the son the next, to show you just our heartbreaking of the father's only...
His motivation.
Motivation was to help his son at that point, to get help for his son.
How old was the dad and how old was the son?
Yeah, father might have been nearing 70. The son, again, early, mid-20s. Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you
confined work... Confined space issues, right?
Oh, sure.
So...
All kinds of issues.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, if you work at the Ministry of Labor long enough, you get a laundry list or a very long list of these types of investigations, right? These things that you don't forget. You don't forget them. You know, you might forget some details of this or that, but, you know, what you see, what you hear, what you feel, you know, some of these things, they're just burned into your memory. And, you know, it's the side effect of having that type of job and being exposed to that. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's other, like paramedics, and then we've brought this before.
Yeah.
The burnout there must be massive. Like, crazy, but
I actually have a great story about that. I had
Frank, you have lots of great stories. That's why you're here, man. We want to hear them all, but we only got half an hour.
I was, I don't know, shocked is too strong a word, responding to one of the accidents or incidents. And a Toronto police constable.
So let me just interrupt you for a second. Please. Now, does the ministry consider them accidents or incidents?
Oh, great question.
Because the thing is, I know that it was 10 years ago or so that Ministry of Transportation got rid of the term accident because it implied that it was not avoidable. And so now you call them a collision. Because you've not been a good driver enough that you could have avoided that situation. So is it considered an accident or an incident?
Yeah, there was a push, I'd say, in the 2010s, there was that discussion. I think we did go over to incidents.
I like incidents.
Yeah, it makes sense
here.
To me. Right?
Same incident.
Yeah, it's always a private incident.
That word accident just implies that, that we had nothing we could have done to prevent this.
Yeah.
Which is not the truth.
No. I think what's the percentage of cases, investigations, fatalities that you think were preventable that you did?
Oh, God, that's high. I mean, 100%. They're all avoidable. They are.
Right?
They all are avoidable.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Toronto police constable, and, you know, we say hello, we exchange notes, or just look, just, you know, talk about the case. And he goes, wow, I wouldn't like your job. We're talking about a constable who's, you know, has to pull possibly bodies from cars and blood spatter and all kinds of things. And he tells me, he goes, I wouldn't want your job. And then I realized, except for the police detective, where they're reacting to whatever, murder or whatever, it's always bad news. Then I realized, of course, the constable helps the old lady across the street, finds that person with Alzheimer's, finds a child. So there is some good news, right? At some point, provides, you know, first aid and might go home once in a while with some good news. And then I guess he was looking at our jobs and thinking, well, it's always bad when you get a call.
But you're like the detective, right?
Yeah.
You're getting right in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, we can talk about the things we've seen day in and day out. One thing's for sure, though. You know, our experiences shape us, right? And I wouldn't be where I am today without those experiences. And I wouldn't be as passionate to what I do without those experiences, right? And sometimes, you know, you have these conversations with employers or workers, you know, you got to tie off, man. You got to make sure you do this. You got to make sure you have the right equipment. And to some people, that sounds like ball breaking. You know, some people that sounds like, you know, you're just being a dick, you got to get it done, et cetera. I mean, but to us, we don't look at it that way. You know, to us, we see the families. We see the ripple effect of you not tying off and, you know, getting seriously hurt or paralyzed. Yeah, I think being paralyzed even worse.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen it all. There is nothing in construction, health and safety that I have not seen.
The problem that I sometimes see with the construction sites, and we'll get into this video that you guys brought because I want to share that, is that it's easy for construction, doesn't matter what trade you are, if you're a supervisor or what story, it's easy for you to construct the ABCs of how to build something. You see, you know, first floor goes up, walls go up, second floor goes up. Like, you're seeing it. Everyone can visualize it. Once you get enough experience, you visualize it. But nobody ever sits there, and I tell you right now, anybody that hasn't seen what you guys have seen or you guys experienced with, you know, they've never experienced that, they can't write, this person's going to fall and go through plywood on a scale. They can't write that. They can't visualize that. But there's 1,000 different ways that someone could fall and how that impact is.
You know, it's funny, Manny. I had the exact conversation with a client yesterday. They're all, we're starting this project. It's going to be 6 stories, et cetera, et cetera. And the scope of work that's happening is a little newer to them. They're not as experienced in this scope of work because they're taking on a lot of the traits. Okay. So we started talking about health and safety and the application of health and safety. And the way I broke it down for them that made the most sense, I think, is, and, you know, the way it made most sense was take a look at what phase of construction you're doing. So excavation. Let's start right from the beginning. Let's dig a hole. What is the worst thing that can happen? The buildings beside you can fall over.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. We have collapse of adjacent structures. Yeah. Or the soil, something from the soil, whatever it may be, tip, collapse, whatever, right? So that's the worst case scenario in the excavation. So the way you said an employer, a trade can visualize
Construction,
the whole scope of project. The trick for the good employers is have the ability to now incorporate safety into that way of designing. So I know that, okay, I do the excavation, I'm going to need this, I'm going to need that, I'm going to need the support, blah, blah, blah. Move on to the next floor, right? What are we responsible for on this floor? Oh, we're going to have a fall hazard here. Okay, we're going to need extra wood for guardrails. We're going to need anchor points. And planning and organizing a project, not just around production, but organizing it around safety or including safety into your production layout, it's a game changer.
It reminds me of all the new kids in construction. You guys know about SketchUp, right?
The little thing sketching.
Three-dimensional mock-up, okay. What your project's going to look like.
No, no.
It's a reasonably... Yeah, no, no, it's a... No, 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 not the edge, not the edge sketch. So a better version of that. Okay. But I'm seeing all this younger generation use it as a tool to sell their services, right? Because it gets a 2D drawing and it shows the client, this is what your house is going to look like. You can change cladding, you can change certain... You're basically taking what you've agreed with the architect on the design of things, right?
Okay.
I think a good contractor would do the service of implementing stages of construction, including safety on SketchUp. So what I'm saying is, here's your dwelling, we're excavation now. Here's your markers on trench, you know, and then all of a sudden you got the first floor up. Now you got guardrails going on, the second floor, guardrails going up. You keep on implementing details of safety, and you wait for the client to say, we're going to hire that person because he or she is so conscious of safety at every different stage of the construction process.
100%. And it goes into budgeting too.
Yeah.
Guardrails cost money, right? Harnesses cost money. Anchors cost money. You know, safety consulting costs money.
Fatalities cost money.
And even if the client doesn't care, man, it's a great point. You really got to sell it to the homeowner client, which is this. Listen, something happens on the site and they don't do it safe like we're going to do it safe. Your job is stopped for 3 weeks or 3 months.
See, Frank.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true and it isn't. And I'll tell you guys why. You have to get caught first.
Ah, okay.
Ooh. You have to get caught first.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Right? How many of us speed and don't get caught?
I never speed.
Never. Hey, didn't they just raid the speed limit now to 110? So the unofficial speed limit is what?
I have different signs that I just get out of the car and change the sign. No, I don't do that. But no, I know you're saying you got to get caught.
You have to get caught.
That's the thing. You got to get caught.
If not counting our last episode talking about unemployment and stuff like that, but the Ministry of Labor currently would take, what, 120 years to inspect every single workplace in the province?
Yes. Sure.
Yeah.
It was scary.
Yeah.
Now with the reduction of construction projects, you know, that number is going to go a lot less. Maybe it only takes 80 years now. Okay.
We still don't have 80.
No. But how many construction and speaking to reactive and proactive work, usually the workload for the Toronto office, the inspectors, is anywhere between reactive 80% and then proactive 20%, fluctuating, right? Depending what it is. So that means that 80% of your site visits, you're reacting to something. Someone called a complaint, someone got injured, someone, hey, this, whatever incident, whatever situation happened. So you're spending all your time playing catch up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So the inspectors are going to have some more free time on their hands to do proactive inspections, which is great, which is something that I think the entire industry has been asking
Why for. Why not set up two divisions? It's not in there.
It's not there. Right now, the Ministry of Labor, you just go by their title. It used to be the Ministry of Labor. Now it's Frank, what is it? ML.
Ministry of Labor, Immigration, Training, and Skills Development.
It's all those things.
Ministry of Labor
Immigration, Training, and Skills
Development. So the amalgamated.
Do we want to talk about that?
I'm confused. I don't understand.
So it used to be just the Ministry of Labor.
No, but why is that word immigration in there now?
Oh, because they're handling immigration in Ontario.
My take and is that towards the end when I was leaving, we were getting some training, at least some exposure to human trafficking. There is a case out in Hamilton. There was a case out in Hamilton years ago of some human trafficking people, workers being used or taken advantage of in the construction industry.
Shit, Frank, that's the Tim Hortons beside my house last week.
Well, yeah.
So holding their passports and like that, right?
So I'm not sure. I'm not beholden or have inside info.
But that's the reasoning why they put them together?
Well,
I can't speak why they amalgamated all these tasks and challenges and things into the Ministry of Labor. Ministry of Labor
was hiring so many government workers that you can probably have a division for every single one of those words.
I don't know. All I know is in their title.
Really fucking,
I know.
Yeah.
All I know is that a lot of the issues that we're having in the construction industry deals with a lot of what those acronyms stand for. Right?
That's interesting. I didn't know that. Like I told you before, since this is day one, I'm going to learn on every single one of these shows.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah.
I want to dive into that. I'm curious about that myself.
Yeah, and maybe for another whole episode, that one.
Yeah, and Philip is right. I was thinking the last case I'll talk about is a house collapse in mid-Toronto. The whole house collapsed, almost like a beautiful controlled demolition.
At what stage?
They were doing the underpinning, Manny. So you're right. This guy, this contractor, might have been around for 20 years. To Phil's point, which is, yeah, until you get caught. So I'm not sure how many.
Or shit hits the fan.
Yeah. So this person seemed to want to, instead of, it should be engineered, number one. Stages. Any underpinning. Stages. And in stages, in sequence.
Yeah. I've done a few of them. And I'm like,
right.
I am a fly on the wall.
So Manny, all this
the professionals guy are there.
Wanted to blow out the back wall during the renovation. So the whole back rear wall of the two-story house is removed. Two, these are his sequences. Two, he removes all of the basement slab floor, all of it. And he starts to dig, too, 18 to 24 inches.
So he only has three structural walls now.
Correct.
While he's excavating the center point.
Right. And he's removed now the concrete slab throughout. So this thing was ready to get, to collapse.
Did they even start the underpinning process?
They did.
And that's when it collapsed.
And that's when it collapsed.
When you do an underpinning, that's when you can't count. There's more concentration of inspector visits for approvals and engineer visits for guidance than any other stage of any kind of construction. If you don't constantly see the cleanest hard hats, blue and white, generally speaking, blue for the, and then white for the engineer, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
And I thrive on that because it's class for me, because now I can start asking these professionals about other projects or about other details and just have a candid conversation. Yeah. But they're there for a purpose. Yeah. Like the inspector has to see the overpour. The inspector has to see the opening before you put any concrete, before you even frame.
Right.
And you have to do it in three, sometimes four stages, depending on how that structure is going to be built.
The ones, the twos.
Yeah.
And the three.
And it goes, and I've done it before where we're working above on other floors. Right. And some people online actually chimed in on me saying, why are you working up? I'm going because I have a complete faith in the inspector that's coming from the building department. And I have complete faith in the engineer that's attaching this process.
Correct.
I think the amount of trust that we have in other people and in other trades in construction is underrated or understated.
I agree.
You have to have a massive amount of trust for what people are doing, man. Right. And then when you get people that sound like they know what they're doing, but obviously they don't know what they're doing, is where you start having issues.
Well, what's construction really good at as a tradesperson?
What do you
like a bullshit meter? You can talk all you want. And you can talk to a first year or a 50th year contractor. And that person will go, this doesn't smell right. Well, no question. I've always done it.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. There's a lot of fugazis out there.
Yeah.
you know, fakers, posers.
Were there people in the basement when it collapsed?
There was a 19-year-old who was there. I wish I could tell the contractor's spouse or partner that he was in there with his two teenage sons as well, a half an hour before. So I could have been a quadruple fatality. Just by luck, by destiny, by timing, they got out.
And it just collapsed.
It just collapsed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No engineering. Wanted to take shortcuts. Did take the shortcuts.
But again, structural failures happen on the biggest projects.
Yeah.
I think on our next episode, one of the videos that I got is a whole entire failure of a system on a high-rise forming project. I think it was the one that happened out in Marco. Remember that last year or something?
Oh,
like that?
Yeah, of course.
Not the one in London. The one in London led to multiple fatalities.
Yes.
But the one out in Markham, like an entire failure, like a black hole opened up and sucked everyone into it. But this happens on multiple levels. And, some trades have more risks than others. depending on the scope of work.
Frank and Phil, you guys want to talk about this video here, right? That you shared on, on my underscore S1.
So let me introduce this video first. We posted this video the other day. I think it 3 days ago, as I say there. I didn't know, 2 days ago, something like that. Sure. Anyways, it's at like 37,000 views. Okay. And it I don't know why it really picked up, but before we show the video, and Frank, I'm going to ask you to break it down for all of the viewers and followers on the show today. We're going to break it down a bit and look at it from the perspective of an enforcement officer, what the issues are here, what the challenges are.
Before you do that, can you just, you can't scroll through the comments there, right?
I can't scroll through the comments, but I'm kind of afraid to scroll through the comments.
Well, because the thing
is, some of these comments are rough, man.
Yeah, no. We attack the comment or we attack the video that we see at face value. But what I would love to see
is the worker's perspective.
Yeah. Well, no, the contractor's saying, listen, all you have to do is tie the hair. Like, all you have to do is, like, I would love to see more comments about educational comments instead of attacking comments or encouraging comments. Yeah. Because I think comments like, hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville. This is called a human slingshot.
So, but hold on a sec.
Like, I get it. It's funny.
To their defense, my comments were, oh man, wrong answers only. So everyone's giving us wrong answers.
Okay, I got it.
So to my defense,
you set it up that way.
Yeah, we set it up that way. Okay. But the comments, listen, depending on what we post, we get a mixed bag of comments. For sure.
Okay.
So but when people see these videos, you know, especially some of these, oh, this only happens in third world countries. Oh, this is a second world. Oh, no, this doesn't happen here. You're wrong.
It happens here.
You're wrong.
It's happening right now.
Yeah. Literally right now. And falls, number one, are the biggest killer of workers in this province. Okay. And the top four are what, Frank? Test time. Go. Top four killer contraventions of workers in this province.
Well, it's falls, it's
struck
trench,
by, struck electrocutions.
Oh, Manny, don't, come on.
Thanks, Manny. Thanks, Manny.
Manny's been learning in this class. Man. Look here.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, cool. Sorry. So, go ahead.
Yeah. Falls, struck by, impact with, electrocutions.
Trench collapse. Buried alive.
This was a bad year for that as well.
Oh, man.
Was it a bad year for that?
Yeah.
Oh, we can talk about that. Was a double fatality?
That's a separate show. Terrible. That's
recently?
Last year was the biggest one. Besides the trench that failed and the worker got buried in King City last month. That one was crazy, too.
Okay, let's see the video.
There we go.
Okay.
Okay, worker. Edge
what is
roof.
That, a 12-4 pitch?
Yeah.
It's pretty steep.
So they're tied off to each other.
And they're right on the edge there.
On the edge.
On asphalt shingles. Wow. How long is that? What is that? Is it two-story structure?
Four stories.
Four story. All right. So then it's not even going to...
You unpacking all of this, Frank?
Yeah.
Are you getting the ticket book ready?
Well, yeah. So it did look, the first shot showed that it appears to be a residential demolition, low rise, right? The whole, it's a project.
What are they demolishing?
Sorry, a roofing, roofing job. I mean, this is a low rise residential project. It appeared that they're just doing the roofing now.
So from ground perspective, you walk on that job site, you see those two guys up there.
Yeah.
Do you think they're tied off?
No, that's a stop work order right there. Get guys, please. Now I'm worried that getting their attention, I'm going to cause them to fall off. So I would gently go upstairs and say, guys, please approach me. Walk towards
slowly.
Well, I'm seeing in the background that there's an opening there.
Yeah.
Which looks like a skylight or something. Yeah. Or I don't know what that
we
is.
We could talk about that later, too. It appears some sort of
what could be like
balcony. Yeah. Yeah,
so maybe that's where they got, they got there.
So I can speak from myself that I've seen this happen multiple occasions where you're on the ground level and guys are two stories, three stories up, and you look up, they have their harness on, and you know, you do that little like the seatbelt, hey, you got your harness on, that little, you know, as an inspector or safety professional, and they'll pull up their lifeline. Yeah, look, I'm tied off. But what we don't know or don't see from the ground perspective is, are they secure to an anchor? Are they tied off to anything?
Please, anchor point would be the, when you walk out of that Working at Heights training here in Ontario, it's glossed over just because of the time constraints. And again, not knowing what the task is of the separate employers and what you're going to be tying off to. So it doesn't get skipped over. It gets spoken to. It gets talked about. But if companies and executives, directors, superintendents, foremen don't go out there now and say, hey, yeah, this is what we do, and what can we attach or secure an anchor point to? That is the, you got to watch your weakest link. You know, on top of everything else, the daily inspections, the harness, is it on right? You know, the lifeline itself, you know. And, but one thing we got to leave with listeners is please take the time to look at your anchor points, whatever they are, whatever products you need to use, right? Yeah. And then we've seen the videos, right? Attaching off to a gas pipe on top of a roof, right? Some other non-engineered or non-secure.
How do we change the law where I know certain countries, I'm not exactly sure, it's mandatory to put an anchor point as part of the roof system?
Or many in the UK where they actually ask for a scaffold to be put up around the house.
Scaffolding,
right?
Will never fly here because the clients will never pay for it. But I've had roofers tell me that in other countries, they've actually put an anchor point at the highest point of the roof, and it's a fixed, it stays there constantly.
A permanent anchor point.
When you re-roof, you're tying, that's your anchor point.
Yeah, and depending on the height of the building, you'll see permanent engineered anchor points that they'll leave on the buildings for window washing and any outriggers or...
But here's the thing. You've got a roofing industry that is coming up with cooler-looking vent caps and cooler-looking, you know, connection points for vent stacks. All this cooler-looking stuff on the roof because they're looking at it like, this is my product, this is my brand, this is the roof. I understand that we don't see it that much, but we still want to make it look pretty. Yeah. I want to see some little tiny hump at the ridge of a roof line, and I know that that's the anchor point.
Should the building code be modified to incorporate permanent anchors into low-rise homes?
100%.
If I was a homeowner that had an anchor on my roof, when I go put up my Christmas lights, would I tie off? Maybe, maybe not. But one thing to keep in perspective here too. The law requires fall protection 100% of the time, right? You have to be protected against falls 100% of the time. You're installing a guardrail, you need to be tied off. You're removing a guardrail, you need to be tied off.
Yeah.
Okay. What happens to the first roofer that goes up on the roof?
Technically speaking, they're breaking the law.
It is impossible for the first worker that goes up on that roof unless the constructor left an anchor there connected to a lifeline that's hanging off the side of the building that I can tie off to while I go up to the top of the roof. But the first guy up is not tied off.
Is that, like, ignorance is not an excuse? Is that in the ministry's book, handbook, saying that, listen, I'm actually climbing up this roof to get to the anchor point.
Or install an anchor.
Or install an anchor at that point. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree with you that there's that window where you're not tied off. Yeah.
And good inspectors
will respect that.
Will understand that.
Yeah.
Because it is beyond anybody's capability to solve that problem.
But I think that we should, in the code, in whatever safety, I think there 100%. Should be a permanent... And it needs to be inspected every so often, and it has to be anchored right to structure, not to plywood. Yeah. We know what our roofs are like.
There's an entire section that deals with temporary anchor points, right? What's a temporary anchor?
Yeah, we know the D-rings in which it's a plate.
No, temporary anchor points, you can wrap, you know, a choker around a solid chimney.
Really?
Yeah.
In cases...
Solid. Temporary anchor points. So anchor points that are not engineered, but you're tying off to them. I'm on a scaffold, for example. Right, and I'm installing guardrails.
You wrap a rope around it with a lanyard, and all of a sudden
you never wrap your lifeline around anything. You wrap some type of choker, and then because as soon as you wrap your lifeline around something, there's multiple scenarios where, you know, you look at the anchor and say, okay, will that withstand? And again, if it's a fall arrest system, that anchor has to withstand a lot more weight to it than a travel restraint system, right? So you get into some of these more detailed specifics. But again, the hardest part out of all of this is just tying off.
Yeah,
tie off something solid.
Now, do you think these two gentlemen didn't tie off because they didn't know or they didn't care?
Well, there's a few things here. One would be, okay, go to the office, site trailer, the constructor. Hey, you got your subcontractors.
There would be one there because it's a four-story.
Right.
Yeah.
And what's going on? Did they give you, you know, their procedures, number one? Did they give you the worker certification? Where are they?
In your language.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the training in their language, right? So you'd get them onto that, looks like a balcony, Manny, we were saying, in a safe zone, come downstairs.
Sorry? Play it again, sorry?
Yeah.
No, it does look like a balcony.
Yeah, sort of a open. And we'd ask them, you know, the training, was the training in their language? And then go to the employer itself. Now, was this, is, where's the employer of these two workers? One. Two, is, was the original employer or subcontractor subcontracted again? We got to speak to that too, which means you cannot sub, you know, if you look at a typical investigation, usually of a critical injury or whatever other investigation, you'll have constructor or primary contractor, and then you'll get sometimes employer number one,
yeah,
employer number two,
sub
employer
number three, sub of a sub
employer
of
number
sub
four.
Of a sub.
Is that done by, like, by design for liability purposes?
Good question.
Insulation? I think I say yes or no.
I think the industry does know now they cannot subcontract the health and safety part of it. It's very difficult to say, I'm going to give you the job. I'm not in charge of safety.
You mentioned that on a previous show. Yeah,
but keep this in mind too. The more layers the constructor has between the worker that got injured and the duties and responsibilities of the constructor, the more people or organizations that are in between that constructor and that worker, the less of a likelihood that constructor can get charged. Why? Because there's more people responsible before the responsibility ultimately.
Yeah.
But again, case by case scenario, depending on the situation. And Frank, to speak to all of your questions, this is why Frank is the old school mentor. He goes through all these nice processes. If it was me, I'd like your driver's license. I'd like your driver's license. Where's your supervisor? I'd like your driver's license too. Where's the constructor? I'd like your driver's license.
You take
license
it too. Or you make a copy of it? Or
we take the information and put it on the charge.
The information.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Frank asked more questions than
what
I
if
would.
They don't have license, driver's license?
We'll get it.
We'll get the information. They'll get it. Now they're obstructing. To the inspector, they're now obstructing.
We'll get it. Right. No, wow. we're just going to...
Makes sense.
We're just going to put maybe a little stop work order until we get all this information. I don't know.
Are you allowed to photograph them to get identity?
As an enforcement officer site. Collecting evidence?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ministry of Labor, Manny, is the most powerful
how
enforcement agency.
How easy it is for
agency.
Him to trip on that. He could step on the line that's very tethered easy. To the yeah. co-worker yeah. and lose his footing from that point.
Well, can you footing. Imagine one guy goes down and the other guy's either A,
he's coming along,
holding him for his dear life, or B, both of them go down? Yeah. And then when you respond to something like that, you know, the police get there and stuff, the first thing they do is see two guys tied to each other with a rope.
And all this for a drip edge.
All of this because they didn't take 15 minutes to install an anchor.
And now you know the police, and they're more less likely to give it to the minute. They're going to take a closer look now under C-45, under the federal bill.
Criminal negligence.
So it becomes
criminal negligence. Yeah, they're taking a closer and closer look. A lot of the paperwork, documentation, essays, legal counsel that you can find online is showing that the last 20 years, it's taken a long time. However, we're getting closer and closer
But we're not seeing a reduction in fatalities, though.
No.
So it's not deterring people now.
But we are, Manny, because there's less construction, so the numbers are going down.
But if you have less workers and the numbers are staying the same, does that...
Listen, all the stats are only going to matter when they look at it. And look, per 100,000 hours... This is the average number, or this is the number of fatalities we're having and injuries.
You're right. Deterrence only goes so far, Manny. You're right. Hey, listen, we used to have the electric chair, the hangman's, you know, like, did that stop people?
I don't know. Right. Is it bringing back the death penalty? Because I feel like there's some people that
speeding ticket it. Fine, though, right? Speeding ticket fine, speeding demerit points. Like, it doesn't started, really. Frank. I mean, the alcohol, does that, it's been curbed.
Yeah,
the drinking while. But the thing is,
has it though?
Man? No, hang on. So I was just about to say,
has it now? I can buy it at the gas station before I show up to work.
Well, the problem is that the weed consumption is still going on, which is still under. Its
we
impairment.
Might have to have an entire show on drugs and alcohol
well, that's
in the workplace.
That's safety. That's another show, right?
Yeah.
But I what I've seen is I've seen alcohol go down and I've seen weed go up.
Yeah.
So it's just a change in the vice.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Yeah.
Listen, construction is a mixed bag of people and always be.
And that's why there's been a push for fit for duty, all the policies, and they're getting refined. You know, you can't show up to work. You got to be fit for duty, which includes, you know, fatigue, drugs, alcohol, any other condition, medical condition.
Yeah, but who's going to self-report, you know, in an environment where you need your hours and you need your money?
Very true.
You're going to say, hey, listen, I took a Tylenol 3 for my bad back.
Yeah.
So even I shouldn't work today, boss?
Even something simple like fatigue, right? Who's going to self-report? They've just finished a 12, 16-hour shift and driven a commute 2 hours to get home. Now, if they have insomnia, they're technically looking at a 48-hour window where they haven't slept. It's happened on one, I've had experience with that, with a worker who did collapse from fatigue and was told to go home, you know.
Yeah. Have a drive home.
No, we had him wait, you know, gave him water. He said, how do you feel? We want to take you home. He didn't want to. He seemed all right, you know, to get some sleep.
We've all been there. I mean, yeah, I've done it before. I've done three days, right?
That's right.
It's just like, but you're younger. But it's just like your timing's off. Your reaction is off. Yeah. And that's when an accident happens. Yeah. So you definitely should be driven home at that point.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about it, man. And again, it'll probably be an entire episode on drugs and alcohol in the workplace.
Oh, it will be. Right? It'll probably be a whole... It's going to be 10 episodes. Drugs. That's the problem, right?
It says on the cough syrup bottle, do not operate heavy machinery. Is my vehicle heavy
machinery? I still mow the lawn. No, I know what you mean, but I don't joke about it on the job site. That's why I've never smelled weed on the job. It was just one time, right? No, on my job sites, right? And he was sent home, right?
I got a couple good stories
But I've never smelled alcohol, right? But I'm of the mindset too, at the end of the week, the workday's done, Friday, you're on the site, technically speaking, it's illegal. You're having a few beers with the buddies, and then you're going. You're not having a whole case with the buddies.
Yeah. Manny.
And then you're going home.
Last year, I was on a low-rise residential project where they had something like 40 carpentry crews. Okay. And the carpentry crews here were a mixed bag of Spanish, Portuguese, Brazilian, you name it. That one day, I collected 27 cans of Corona. Empties.
Cans.
The big cans. Ones, those little tall.
No, why are you drinking out of a can?
I don't know. They crush them and manage to, you know, but they're drinking out of a can.
Oh, to get rid of them. Oh.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it's convenient, whatever it is. But 27 cans of beer I picked up on a job site just so that the constructor wouldn't see these cans of beer and say, hey, you guys are a bunch of drunks. But again, you know, some of these older issues are starting to resurge again. Due to the nature of the workforce, the lack of this, the lack of that.
Economics, man.
Economics, right? You start getting some of these old vices again. But yeah, it blew my mind. You know, don't get me wrong. When I was a kid, you worked with some guys. They'll drink a bottle of wine. It was in their cooler. These old school Portuguese guys. Bottle of wine at lunchtime, no problem. I almost got into a fight. Not almost. I got into a fight with a forklift operator who drank a bottle of wine at lunch. And I'm like, hey, man, listen, you shouldn't drink a bottle of wine.
That's a lot.
An operator.
That's a lot.
Forklift. And this guy almost knocks me off the scaffold, almost takes the whole scaffold down. Did I not come down there? And this guy was, I was 17. And almost got into a fight with this 50-year-old Portuguese guy. He wanted to kill me. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, falls is the number one killer contravention. The biggest problem that anybody has when it comes to fall protection is actually tying off, right? Like
that's the big one.
Just tie off.
So if you guys were there, you were walking by this site, the best thing in this situation to actually enter the building, get as close to them without startling them, and just asking them, can you guys
please
come here?
No, please come down.
Just come down.
Yeah, no, please come down. We need to reevaluate your entire life choices at this moment.
But as an advisor in the, you know, you want to get the discussion going, saying, okay, come back to the trailer. Listen, do we have any paperwork, any procedures here? Phone call, right? You know, the worst thing I think that a superintendent or foreman wants is to be, or a road project manager is to be called with problems, right?
Yeah, nobody wants
problems. All right. And they said, you know, I need you here right now if I was with the constructor. And I said, we need to discuss what's happening. I'd send him the picture, email it, right? And two things are either happening. Either he told these workers to tie off and do it right, and now they haven't because they've taken a shortcut. And, you know, we'll bring that out in a meeting. I said, you know, you guys are going to have to give a procedure. You're going to follow your own procedure. You need to figure out your own task, where to tie off, how these workers are going to do the rest of the job. Right, safely tied off, secured to an anchor point.
Is it like I'm an idea guy, right? Yeah. So I'm just looking at this and I'm just thinking, does it make sense for the tie off to be color coded one end, which means that it gets attached to the harness, and then the other end color coded another color, it gets attached to the anchor point. Does that make sense?
The new CSA, well, not new anymore, but the CSA standards require lifelines to have an engineered component at the end. So either it's going to have a hook, right? Or it's going to have one of those engineered loops.
A lanyard with a threaded on it.
Yeah, something like that. It's an engineered end.
I know, but if you're putting both ends that way?
Yeah, because lifelines, what they used to do was, you know, they attach the rope grab attached to the lifeline, but if the rope grab was damaged or whatever, they'll put a knot at the end of the lifeline, right? So if it slides, the knot's supposed to stop you. Some variation of...
I'm just trying to think of how do we educate the workers going, listen, it's blue, it gets attached to us. If it's red, it gets attached to the anchor point.
Again, step one, tie off. When do I need to tie off? Where do I need to tie off? How am I going to tie off? What equipment am I using? This all comes from the instruction of the supervisor and the employer. If they're not providing this information, it's because they didn't think about it or they don't care.
And the products. They need to order the products that's going to be the anchor point.
And replace the products when they've gone through their life, right? Have you guys been, through your years of experience, have you seen people that have been properly set up, anchor, tied, life, all that stuff?
Absolutely.
But they're wearing an expired harness or expired line.
I could care less about the expiry dates on these things.
It doesn't bother? It doesn't matter?
Me personally...
What about affected by construction material? Spray foam or glue?
Condition of equipment is more important than the expiry.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean? For me, as an officer, as a consultant, whatever it is, why? Some of these expiry dates, they just put it on just so that you can go buy more harnesses. Because if I have this harness sitting on my shelf for 2 years... And I only, the expiry date's next year, but I've only used it twice.
Yeah.
Right? It's a really good way to get people to buy more things. But that being said,
I totally agree. Yeah.
The condition of the equipment is the most important thing. Yeah. The setup and arrangement of that specific equipment, depending on the nature of the work you're doing, whether you're working on a floor, a mezzanine, working off a scaffold, right? Or a work platform, working off a roof, right? All of these things come into play. Organization, planning, and having the right equipment and implementing that equipment, right? But when you see shit like this, from the enforcement perspective, okay, there's a good chance that the majority of questions that you're going to ask after that, where's your equipment? Where's what anchors are you using? Where's your training cards? You know, the answers are going to be a bust.
Of course.
I'm not sure. I don't know. This guy told me to do it like this.
I was just told to get up here and do this.
I was just up here for two minutes. My boss didn't tell me anything. And when shit like this goes down, everyone is really quick to point fingers at the next person.
Of course.
Right? And to speak back to what Frank was talking about too, companies also have what's called a disciplinary policy. Strike one, strike two, strike three. Yeah.
So you guys keep a black book of...
Not you guys.
The ministry, I mean.
No, not the ministry either. The employer. Okay. Right? How do you get disciplined? You get caught stealing. Hmm. You get caught doing something unsafe. You know, maybe there's a workplace violence and harassment issue and you're being investigated for that. Right? The employer is self-policing or should be self-policing. Yeah. It's called the internal responsibility system. Right? So how do you discipline workers that do not follow safety rules? Strike one, strike two, strike three.
Simple.
And that goes for unionized workers. That goes for non-unionized workers.
Let me ask you guys, because we got to wrap it up. Okay. If you were to fine these two individuals, what are we talking about, the grocery list of fines here? If they were, you're not overlooking anything.
As an inspector,
what are we talking in today's fines? What would they be?
$295 or $325 for lack of fall protection?
You do the inspector. I'll do the advisor. Advisor, this happened on a site as an advisor. In consultation with the superintendent, who agreed with me, almost similar but on a different platform. At a height, we sent them home for the day. Said, guys, we went through the daily field level risk assessment, the pre-work shift assessment, and this was not on the plan. Now, this was what was interesting. The worker's response, one of them being a lead hand foreman, was, Mr. Superintendent, what are you going to say, that he told you to do it like this without fall protection? Well, no, he implied. So I went straight to the superintendent. I said, be very careful in what you may be implying or not implying, because the first thing he did, okay, nothing happened here, just that he's not working with the equipment, is that he wanted to throw you under the bus. And the superintendent looked at me, wow. I said, that's the first instinct. If that worker should have fallen, the lead hand would have said, well, the superintendent with the constructor implied to me that this was the way to get it done. So as an advisor, yes, stop for the day or half day. But, you know, that would be, you know, I work with my team in the private industry. We don't want to stop the work, but we also have to be serious.
Send a message.
To Philip, send a message, disciplinary policy. There will be a discipline, oral or written or both, and on record, yeah. So to protect.
Listen, ourselves. You have, as an employer, you need to enforce your rules.
So you were saying $395?
So I think it's $295.
For not tying it off.
You know what? On the next episode, we'll pull up the fines. Yeah. But let's just say, for the purpose of our conversation right now, it's $300. So if I was an enforcement officer, A, I would fine both those workers $300 for not being protected against falls.
Boom. That's it.
That's what the part one ticket is.
No fine
is.
For lid?
No. My concern isn't their lids, right? If I wanted to be...
I'm just trying to buy the book.
Man, buy the book?
Buy the book. What are they? What would they
potentially
get? So
$275 or $295 for not having a hard hat on.
Okay.
Another $300 for not being tied off.
Yeah.
Whether or not those are safety shoes is... But if they're not, that's another $300. So $900 right there for each one. And then I would find the supervisor of these guys, and I would give them a summons to court. And I would, summons to court. We're not even going to have the conversation. You go in front of a judge and explain to a judge why you have two workers not tied off to anything other than themselves.
And what's his fine going to be, Rudy?
It'll be a maximum of $1,000. Is that what it is?
No, I think it's two.
Is it not? If I'm not
mistaken.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Summons is...
So we're just under $3,000.
Right? Yeah. And then I would charge the employer. Just to add, and come on, Frank, don't do that face. We're going up the hill, man. It's the employer's responsibility.
No, it's true. And then, he gets a summons as well.
That one is a part three prosecution with up to $2 million max fine currently.
Wow.
So I would take this right to the door of the director of the company and say, hey, man, you're the owner of this company. You didn't supply anchors to these guys? Again, investigation, evidence, all of that
stuff.
About
cause too, be afraid. Be very afraid of your defense lawyer who will ask for
we haven't even factored that in. $50K
retainer.
Yeah. Easily $600 an hour those guys are making.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. So again, in the grand scheme of things, it's cheaper to prevent. The anchor costs a lot less than all of that stuff. The extra 5 minutes the supervisor goes up there to figure out how the work is going to get done or to make sure that the necessary equipment is installed and being used takes 10 minutes. Right? So you can save yourself a lot of headaches from that. And again, my level of enforcement isn't necessarily the level of other inspectors' enforcement.
But you want the industry to be educated that that's the possibility.
Yeah, but as an inspector's perspective, you know, all the stuff I just mentioned, there's a lot of paperwork involved there.
It is, yeah.
Some people don't like doing all the paperwork. And they'll just say, hey, game, make sure you tie off better next time.
Doesn't it make sense that you look at it more like I just saved two lives?
Oh, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah. You know what they say in our job? It's a thankless job. If I did bring these guys down from the roof, could I have potentially saved their lives? Most likely.
I would think that you did.
Yeah, but no one's going to say, hey, thanks for saving my life.
You can't keep a record, unfortunately, of those kinds of records. Manny, it's unfortunate. And John Savoy.
They have no value?
No, they do, but they're not measurable. In terms of I walked away from my day.
But your moral compass, though.
Right. Oh, yeah. My moral compass? Oh, yeah.
Well, my moral compass is good when it comes to health and safety and all these other issues. Health and safety,
it's a very thankful job. I feel great about the job. You know, I don't need anyone to pat me on the back. However, there's no way, the analytics, you can't measure that. I walked away from my day or any inspector today, a regulatory inspector, and saying, hey, the water is cleaner. The air is cleaner. A worker has been saved today. No one's, I mean,
how do I calculate
if you go by that mentality, then it, theoretically, Ministry of Labor inspectors have saved thousands of lives.
Yeah.
And they probably have.
Yeah.
In
my mind, they have too. A stop work order that saved more things from happening.
And a shout out to the private industry. We have some good players in this in this province and across the country.
And they've done the right things.
And they're sending workers home. And they're asking supervisors and project managers to come to the site and answer for the way their workforce behaves or doesn't behave. Right. So
isn't it as simple as just going to the worker who is potentially at risk in a situation and going to them, listen, do you have a significant other? Do you have kids?
Right.
Do you have siblings? Right. I want you to go home, and I want you to call them, hug them, kiss them, keep them.
Oh, but many.
That doesn't, there's like, no value there?
There is value there. There was an inspector that when she would catch workers not tied off, and she'd look at them and say, you have two choices. Give me your wife's phone number, or are you taking the ticket? Whether they're allowed to do that or not is another story. But
that was old school.
That was old school.
That's a hard decision.
But you should have seen the fear.
She would call the wives.
That's a hard decision to make. Yeah.
And I was there once when she did it, and I was standing 4 feet away, and I could hear this wife just ripping this guy.
That's a good way to look at things, huh?
Hey, man. But again, you know, how do you tell the 17-year-old not to speed in the BMW and do 190 on the 401? And how do you tell this guy not to do that? And this, the reality is it comes down to money, training, enforcement, people not caring.
Maybe more risk-taking in this environment.
Sure.
I had an old school guy tell me, he says, Frank, we didn't get up in the morning, we didn't earn, but for our family, for ourselves, right? I don't know. I can't speak to the larger social issues about, you know, risk-taking and, yeah.
The less money you have, the more risk you're going to take. That's the equation in my head.
Interesting.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You're in the third world country and I need to make $5 to feed my family? Yeah, I'm going to go hang off the side of a building and do this and that and try to make some money, right?
They don't think about safety at all. Like, very little.
Listen, you always think about self-preservation, right? Again, it comes down to what am I willing to risk and why am I risking it? And this is what's happening in our industry. It's more risks are being taken. Unnecessary risks.
We're going to wrap it up?
Yeah. How do we put it over today?
Well, time flies. Thanks.
Frank,
I've told everybody that comes on the show, it doesn't go, we've gone over an hour. That's all I'm saying.
Have we gone over an hour with Frank?
Just saying. Frank, it could have kept on going for days. That's what I'm saying. Oh, Frank, man. You're more than welcome to come back anytime. Cheers. And shed more light on this.
It's been a pleasure.
You're a wealth of knowledge, and you seem like a straight shooter, and I'm so glad that you're mentoring more and more people.
Yes.
And that's all we can do right now, is just shine more light on this. Simple as that, right? We can joke about these videos.
Of course, and
make the jokes and things like that. But we also want to take, as constructors that care about the construction industry,
sure,
just do your part. That's all we're asking for you to do.
Yeah, the minimum requirements, man.
Maybe on those boards now and all the job sites, significant other phone numbers should be there.
Oh, wow. You're going to be automatically other guys calling other guys' wives.
Do you know what your husband's doing right now?
Listen, the one of the best videos I think I've posted on Instagram was, I think it was out in Indonesia or one of these, any other country. And it's a red box that has the words on it that says, do you know who safety starts with? Then you open the box and it has a mirror inside. You. I think that's where it starts.
It's great. We should do
this. Someone tells me go on a roof and doesn't give me any equipment and tells me, dog, go ahead and do it and don't worry about it, I'd say no.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks so much, Frank, for being on the show. Really appreciate
Thanks
it, man.
Thanks to the Construction Life.
That's
Thanks,
it.
Manny.
We're all
Safety Corner, my friend.
Safety Corner, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Safety Corner, powered by S1 and Construction Life.
Okay,
yeah,
this is a joint venture.
We're going to get everybody talking about the Safety Corner. What's going on next on the Safety Corner?
Oh, fuck.
Maybe on the next episode, we actually call wives.
Oh, I like that.
Good luck.
Whoa.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.